This is Brother Michael A. Smith, a voice for Freemasonry, bringing to you the Short Talk Bulletin, published monthly by the Masonic Service Association of North America since 1923.
This is Brother David Kantz of United Lodge No. 8, Brunswick, Maine, presenting to you Volume 78, No. 11, November 2000. Theodore Roosevelt, by Robert Morris. Brother Robert Morris is secretary of Manchester Lodge, Manchester by the Sea, Manchester, Massachusetts. In 1927, the renowned sculptor John Gutzon Borglum began his magnum opus, the greatest sculptural project of all time, on the granite face of Mount Rushmore in the Black Hills of South Dakota, whereon he carved the mammoth faces of Presidents Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Theodore Roosevelt. To be sure, the first three had already achieved their place in history. Roosevelt, however, had he lived, would have been only 69 years old at the time, and by his accomplishments had already achieved equal status with his three immortal predecessors. Theodore Roosevelt was born in New York City on October 27, 1858, of well-to-do parents. He was a scrawny kid with bad health. His asthma gave him and his parents great concern. Many nights he was forced to sleep sitting up and resorted to all sorts of remedies of the day, including the smoking of cigars, to help force his lungs to work to their capacity. He was mostly taught by personal tutors until it was time for him to enter Harvard University. He was graduated from Harvard in 1880. While in Cambridge, he had almost become a naturalized Bostonian. He got to know intimately the important families there and even met his future wife, Alice Lee of Chestnut Hill. They were later married in Brookline. The couple returned to New York on October 2, 1881, where he ran for and was elected to the New York State Legislature, being the youngest man ever to serve there. While there, he was also elected Minority Leader of the House, again, the youngest ever. He made it a point to crack the hold of the entrenched politicians and was a prime mover in improving the working conditions in the rampant New York City sweatshops. Good fortune, however, did not long smile on Roosevelt. While in his second term, he lost both his mother and his wife on the same day, when his infant daughter Alice was only 2 days old. After that double tragedy, he was in no condition to seek re-election and retired to his ranch in the Dakota Territory to rest and recuperate. The rest and recuperation was, however, only an illusion. Ranching was hard outdoor work, and he became involved with other ranchers, becoming chairman of the local Ranchers Association and traveling around to other similar types of communities. On one occasion, the talents he had acquired during his youth and college stood him in good stead. One such talent was boxing. In one case, when he entered a Western saloon, he was immediately set upon by a local bully, who, after calling him Four Eyes and threatening him with physical violence, was promptly flattened by Roosevelt. On another occasion, after he had been appointed deputy sheriff, he and two others set out in pursuit of three local outlaws. They were captured, and instead of being strung up, as was the local custom, Roosevelt and his companions brought them back to justice, but only after a harrowing 3-week trip through the frozen countryside and living off the land. During his entire stay in the Dakotas, he simply did not know how to relax. When he wasn't ranching or chasing outlaws, he was writing endless letters, books, and articles for publication, and when not that, was reading, reading, and reading. If not a dime novel, then it was War and Peace, and in French, Anna Karenina. The restless Roosevelt, however, could not long stay isolated. He finally returned east, remarried, and campaigned vigorously for the election of Benjamin Harrison. When he took office on March 4, 1889, Roosevelt was rewarded with a position on the Civil Service Commission in Washington, D.C., where he proceeded to dominate and distinguish himself by reforming that department. He was continued in that office even after the opposition party under President Cleveland took office. He had previously known Cleveland as governor of New York when he was a member of the legislature, and had had his first experience in cajoling the opposition leader into agreeing with his proposals for reform. After 6 years in Washington, Roosevelt returned to New York City, where he served for 2 years as president of the police board. He again used his considerable abilities and talents to eliminate the rampant graft then in effect, raising morale and modernizing the department. Ever restless, he now accepted President McKinley's appointment as Assistant Secretary of the Navy on April 19, 1897. He found fertile territory for instituting his own reformist ideas, and especially those involving his insistence on a two-ocean navy. In those days of imperialism, he was certain that the time had come for the United States to cease being a second-rate power and take its rightful place alongside the British Empire and Germany. Simultaneously, he insisted that the Monroe Doctrine be revitalized and that all European powers should be eliminated from the New World. The chief remaining European power was, of course, Spain. In the agitation of the local peoples in Cuba, Colombia, and Panama, he found fertile soil in which to eliminate Spain as a colonial New World power. The unfortunate blowing up of the U.S. battleship Maine on February 15, 1898, was a propitious moment to confront the issue head-on. In addition to the popular outrage over the event, he took this opportunity to order Admiral Dewey to take his fleet to Manila Bay in the Spanish-held Philippines. This simultaneously paved the way for the ultimate annexation of Hawaii. Roosevelt, however, was still deskbound and felt thwarted that he could not be in the midst of it all and personally direct the action. He accordingly resigned as Assistant Secretary of the Navy, and as soon as war had been declared, volunteered to lead a volunteer cavalry regiment, later to become popularly known as the Rough Riders, which successfully stormed San Juan Heights in Cuba and was largely instrumental in bringing the war to a successful conclusion. His popularity was immense, and he returned to the United States a hero. Capitalizing on these accomplishments, he now successfully sought the governorship of New York and began his two-year term of office on January 1, 1899. Because of a slim majority and resistance from machine Republicans, he had to fight every inch of the way for reforms in state government, which he was eventually able to accomplish. The party regulars, however, had decided that the obstreperous Roosevelt could not serve the party elsewhere. On June 21, 1900, they were successful in having him nominated to serve as his brother Mason, President McKinley's running mate. On November 6, 1900, they were elected by a landslide. From November 6, 1900 to December 31, 1900, it was at this time that the tenets of Masonry took hold of Roosevelt, and on November 21st, he applied for membership in Matinecock Lodge No. 806, near his Long Island estate in Oyster Bay, New York. He was elected to receive the degrees on December 12, 1900, and after his term as governor expired on December 31st, took his first degree on January 2, 1901. He received his second degree on March 27, 1901, after the inauguration, and his third degree on April 24th. Because of his special status, the lodge room was filled to capacity with over 500 members present. Most of the degree team consisted of past and present Grand Lodge officers. Insofar as time permitted, President Roosevelt did not let his office preclude him from participation in several noteworthy Masonic occasions. He participated in various Masonic cornerstone laying ceremonies, among which were those of the Army War College in Washington, D.C. on February 21, 1903, the new Masonic Temple in Tacoma, Washington on May 22, 1903, the U.S. House of Representatives new office building on April 14, 1906, after which he delivered his famous Muckraker speech, the Masonic Temple, Washington, D.C. on June 8, 1907, and together with his fellow Mason, the governor of Massachusetts, Curtis Guild, the Pilgrim Memorial Monument at Provincetown, Massachusetts, on August 20, 1907. In another famous Masonic incident when he was president, he attended his own lodge in Oyster Bay, sat on the sidelines, and asked the worshipful master for permission to speak. It has been erroneously stated that the master was Roosevelt's own gardener, but in reality, he was the gardener on a nearby estate. It has also been erroneously suggested that Roosevelt was master of his lodge, but he was never master of any lodge. Even after Roosevelt was no longer in office, he always made sure to visit local Masons during his travels, even some in the remotest sections of Africa and South America. Roosevelt's high regard for Masonry can best be summed up in his own words as recorded in his speeches and writings. Among the most representative are the following quotes. "The one place in the world where brothers meet on the level and where they can speak their thoughts without being misquoted and misunderstood. One of the things that attracted me so greatly to Masonry that I hailed the chance of becoming a Mason was that it really did act up to what we, as a government and as a people, are pledged to. Of treating each man on his merits as a man. My pleasure is even greater when going into some little lodge where I meet the plain, hard-working men, the men who work with their hands, and meet them on a footing of genuine equality, not false equality, of genuine equality, conditioned upon each man being a decent man, a fair-dealing man. One of the greatest values in Masonry is that it affords an opportunity for men in all walks of life to meet on common ground, where all men are equal and have one common interest. Masonry should make and must make each man who conscientiously and understandingly takes its obligations a fine type of American citizen, because Masonry teaches him his obligations to his fellows in practical fashion. And Masonry must foster in him a genuine feeling for the rights of others and for the feelings of others. While he was president and under his administration and leadership, he entertained the first black leader, Booker T. Washington, in the White House, appointed the first Jewish American, Oscar Straus, to a cabinet position, ordered antitrust proceedings against the Northern Securities Company and subsequently at least 40 other antitrust proceedings. He successfully intervened to settle a 5-month-long coal strike, began work on the Panama Canal, and personally inspected the site and posed sitting at the controls of a giant steam shovel, the first president ever to leave the country while in office. He presided over the enactment of the Pure Food and Drug Act. His experience as a conservationist and naturalist resulted in the transfer of some 125 million acres to the forest reserves. He used his good offices to mediate an end to the Russo-Japanese War by inviting the delegates to a peace conference at the Portsmouth Naval Base in New Hampshire, where the participants were housed in the famous Wentworth-by-the-Sea Hotel. For this effort, he became the first American ever to be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. He later traveled to Oslo, Norway, to receive this award in 1910. On hearing that the big game hunter Roosevelt had spared the life of a bear cub while hunting in Mississippi, a political cartoonist of the day depicted the scene in a cartoon, which provided the impetus for the worldwide, ubiquitous, and enormously popular teddy bear. The reason Theodore Roosevelt sits atop Mount Rushmore is not only for his tremendous accomplishments, but also because he is one of the most fascinating presidents the United States ever produced. He was his own best advocate of the old adage he adopted and made famous as his own: speak softly and carry a big stick. He did indeed practice what he preached, and has truly left his mark on his times, on Masonry, and on the centuries.
This is Brother Michael A. Smith, a voice for Freemasonry, and this has been the Short Talk Bulletin Podcast, brought to you by the Masonic Service Association of North America for the purpose of supporting the worthy goals of disaster relief campaigns, hospital visitation, and the spread of Masonic information and knowledge. If you agree with supporting these worthy goals, please donate, and thank you.